This is the VeriSage Podcast, a casual conversation about professional knowledge workers and the relationships they have with their firms and customers.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the VeriSage Podcast. I'm Ed Kless, Ron's lapdog, as we'll find out why that is a funny comment in just a little bit. But, Ron, not 1 week back from Australia, and you've created a tempest in a teapot.
Thanks, Ed.
with this post that you did in the LinkedIn accounting group on Do Accountants Still Matter? Yep. And it's, as of this recording, has 157 comments on it. Originally running about 50-50, but then it seems to, in the last 24 hours, has begun to sway very heavily toward folks who are anti what you had to say. So why don't you quick summarize it for those who haven't seen the article, and then let's talk a little bit about some of the comments that people were making.
Okay. Well, as you know, Ed, Chip Cutter is an editor at LinkedIn, and we did about a half hour, 20-minute interview, something like that. And it was mostly about Firm of the Future stuff, timesheet, billable hour. But then he asked me what I thought the biggest risk to the accounting profession was, and I said irrelevancy. And this is something that, you know, we've talked about internally at VeriSage. I've talked about it with Big Four partners and other people in the profession. And the bottom line is, I believe that the generally accepted accounting principles model, which is, 500 years old, is a deteriorating paradigm, as a philosopher would say. And that is, it has to get more and more complicated because it doesn't explain things very well. It lacks explanatory power, so it degenerates into a more complex thing. And I do believe, in a lot of ways, that accounting is becoming irrelevant.
All right. Well, let's distinguish that, because I think that there's a couple of things that doesn't necessarily mean that all people who are doing accounting, so accountants, are irrelevant. It just means that the as a discipline, it's becoming more and more irrelevant.
Yeah, I mean, we all know we live in an intellectual capital economy. The World Bank tells us that 80% of the world's wealth resides in human capital and institutional capital. Well, you'll look in vain to find that on a balance sheet, for instance, because the GAAP can't deal with value. GAAP can only record value after a transaction. And this is part of its deteriorating paradigm status. That's why some people refer to GAAP as the three blind mice. You know, the financial, the balance sheet, the income statement, the statement of cash flows are the three blind mice, because 80% of the wealth doesn't show up. I mean, we expense human capital. Now, in all fairness to GAAP, GAAP was never meant to record value before the fact. GAAP can only record value after the fact. And as you know from our courses in teaching the trading game and how wealth is created, in the real world, as our colleague Dan Morris loves to say, debits don't equal credits, because it doesn't look at the buyer's profit. GAAP assumes that things are of equal exchange. And that's another problem with the whole value mentality. So when you look at the debates going around in GAAP about mark-to-market or fair value, we're asking GAAP something that it's not capable of doing. GAAP is not a theory. The accounting equation, assets minus liabilities equals equity, is an identity equation. It's not a theory. It can't peer into the future. It can't have a say about value. To peer into the future, as you know, you need a theory. Accounting is not a theory. So by asking it to do market to market or fair value or valuing intangibles, we're asking it to do something that it is constitutionally incapable of doing. And I think the philosopher Wittgenstein said it best, where he says, whereof one cannot speak, thereof one must be silent. We can only expect GAAP to record the past. And therefore, I think it's a lagging indicator. Even if it's real-time accounting in the cloud, it only rises to a coincident indicator. And therefore, I think it's just becoming less and less relevant.
Now, this is not to say that people who are accountants, CPAs or chartered accountants, depending where they are, do not have something to offer to their customers by applying theory to the numbers that they account for.
I agree. I'm not trying to say that there aren't some accountants that don't, add value. I'm just saying that the profession as a whole, when you look at initiatives like the value reporting revolution that the Big Four have tried to do, when you look at things like the enhanced business reporting model that the AICPA and a consortium of private sector firms tried to do, these initiatives are falling flat. And they're falling flat because they're trying to wedge intellectual capital into a paradigm that can't look into the future. And so we just have to realize that the gap is just a bookkeeping function. It's debt is equal credits. And to have all these other complicated issues is just a way to, get around the idea that the thing is becoming less and less explanatory. I mean, if you look at Bernie Madoff, if you look at Enron, if you look at Tyco, you know, certainly these companies didn't fail because their accounting was bad. The accounting only covered it up, you know. And I think what Enron pointed out to me more than anything was the complete irrelevancy of GAAP. Nobody invested in Enron because they read the financial statement or the auditor's report. Give me a break. And so I just think that business people have to look into the future. And I think this goes back, Ed, to Peter Drucker's last public speech in December 21st of 2006 that George Gilder talked about, where Drucker came out and he basically said, no one in your company knows less about your business than your CFO. Now, the reason was, in Gilder's interpretation, was because Drucker was stating the law, number one, of the telecosm, which is knowledge is about the past and entrepreneurship is about the future. CFOs deal with internal problems. They look inward. They look at costs. They look at activities and efforts. They don't have theories about value. They don't look externally. They don't look beyond their own walls. This is why when you see companies taken over by financial people, they usually deteriorate. Exhibit A and B are GM and Chrysler. These were run by not car guys, but by financial guys who tried to, you know, get the cars out on time and less cost, blah, blah, blah. They weren't passionate about cars. Compare that to Apple. Apple's passionate about the design of their products, and that's why they're so successful. They're not run by bean counters. They're run by visionaries who take risks and are entrepreneurs.
Right, right.
So, you know, some of the comments on this discussion thread were challenging me and pitying my lack of real-world experience and all this, and I thought, well, okay, what do you say to Peter Drucker? You're going to say that Peter Drucker doesn't understand business? You're going to say that Peter Drucker doesn't understand CFOs? Here's a man who, in his last public appearance, said the person you should ignore, he was telling CEOs, was your CFO. This is an astonishing statement, but it's a reflection of the reality that accounting is caught up in plain history. That's why we make jokes about auditors, you know, going after the battle and bayonet the wounded.
Yeah, and I want to follow up on that, Ron. And it was actually something you said partway through that. Is the second two questions that Chip asked you were regard specifically to auditors, and one of the things that came out a lot in the comments was, hey, listen, you didn't understand. Accounting is not just auditing.
And right.
I just want to give you a little bit of a chance to respond to that, because I think there was a lot of misinterpretation of what you had to say.
Absolutely. Clearly, only 15%, at least in the United States of America, only 15% of licensed CPAs do attest work or audit work. 85% of CPAs out there are doing tax work, forensics. You know, they're doing other things. And so, I do draw a big distinction between auditors and certainly auditors of public companies versus private companies. There's that distinction there, too. But bottom line, if you're talking about the 15% of audits and the reason why, Ed, that the accounting profession has a monopoly, a state granted, not a federal, a state granted monopoly on the attest function is because of the audit. You know, they're the only profession that can audit. A lawyer or a consultant can't do an audit. Now, I believe that monopoly status, just like any in any other market, us consumers, we hate monopolies. We didn't like Ma Bell. We didn't like the regulation of the trucking or the financial or the airline industry. I believe we should relinquish the audit. I don't believe we need an audit. I mean, a monopoly in audit. I think we should open it up. Let the stock markets hire the auditors. Let insurance companies offer financial statement insurance. I cracked up how many people thought that was a silly idea. But in a free market, they probably would have laughed at Google 20 years ago. If I would have asked them, would you be Googling something in 5 years? They probably would have laughed at that, too. And now it's an instrumental part of their life. We don't know what kind of black swans a free market's going to come up with, but that's the point. If we have a monopoly, we're stifling innovation. The auditing profession, because of peekaboo and all the other rules, is so regulated. If it was Silicon Valley had that type of regulation, we'd have Vacuum Tube Valley, you know, probably in West Virginia, named after Robert Byrd.
Right. Yep. So, and this brings up another point that I wanted to have you elaborate on. And I made this point, and this is where I think I got into the lapdog criteria. One of the commenters said that I was your lapdog for defending you in some way. He also assumes, by the way, that I'm your employee, which is kind of funny.
Hysterical.
Yeah.
Little does he know you're my boss, but that,
Well, that's not true either. But the difference between that you were trying to point out is, and this is a philosophy idea, the difference between the is and the ought. I don't think no one is saying that accountants ought not to be valuable to their customers. I think what you are saying is, unfortunately, it's denigrated to an extent that the majority are not valuable to their clients and customers.
Right. And you made this point, too, I think, in one of your comments. And I just got this point from an EY principal that to engage in this thought experiment. If you didn't have Sarbanes-Oxley legislation, if you didn't have a very complicated tax code, like if we went to a flat tax, what would the majority, you know, would people still buy these services? Now, no, I think the accounting profession would dramatically shrink if you didn't have these regulatory revenue, items that the profession has more and more become dependent on. We love it every time the Congress changes the tax code. We love it when Sarbanes-Oxley and Dodd-Frank and all these other burdensome regulations come out, because it just creates more and more work for us. But it's regulatory work, and it's not creating any real value in the economy. In fact, I think it's destroying value. And what it's really doing, what concerns me, is it's causing our profession to lack innovation. You know, our last innovation as a profession was 1978. When we came out with the compilation and the review. That's a 24 or, you know, however long, a 34-year innovation curve. That's crazy. You know, that'd be like us. We wouldn't even be in DOS yet, I don't think. You know, I mean, that's insane. And yet this is what happens when you have a highly regulated profession like accounting. And any regulatory profession or regulated business is going to slide more and more into irrelevancy. That's just the way it is. They become a crony of the government.
And then therefore protected by the government. So
absolutely. There's not only regulatory revenue, but as you know, there's regulatory capture.
Right.
So we run to the government and we want more regulation. The Big Four love Sarbanes-Oxley. The worst piece of legislation to pass since Obamacare and Dodd-Frank, but our profession loved it because it dropped $1.4 billion into their lap. But it didn't create any value for the economy, and it certainly didn't set out to do what it was supposed to do, which was to protect shareholders.
Right. Well, I forget who said this, but somebody pointed out to me that that Sarbanes-Oxley was passed in response mostly to the Enron incident, where accountants screwed up, and then we dropped then another $1.4 billion into the laps of accountants.
Yeah, exactly. It's like when the government fails, the SEC gets bigger. And that's what happens when you're in a regulated industry. When it fails, it just gets bigger. It just gets subsidized, right? The dog is always the government's best friend, which is why you and I are subsidizing the Chevy Volt, which nobody wants.
Well, Ron, thanks for taking the time here to clarify some of these things for us, and we'll get this podcast up as quickly as we can. Is there anything else that you wanted to add before we wrap?
Yeah, just I guess the thing that I should have pointed out, and I hope Chip does in future articles, is just I see three roads the profession can follow in the future, and that is do nothing. And if we do nothing as a profession, if we don't reinvent ourselves, if we don't add value outside of ourselves, then the world doesn't owe us a living. And I don't care how many monopolies we have, we're going to be sliding into more and more irrelevance. We're not going to be the premier financial profession anymore. The second option I think we have is outsiders replace us. You know, the perennial gales of creative destruction that Joseph Schumpeter talks about. And maybe the stock exchanges do hire auditors. Maybe insurance companies do come in and offer a financial statement insurance. But I think the third road is the profession reinvents itself. We relinquish the audit monopoly. We truly become independent. We're not independent now. Auditors are not independent because they're paid by the clients they audit. We got to get rid of that. If we want to stand for something as a profession, if we truly want to be a profession, we have to profess something. We have to stand for something. And right now, I'm not sure what CPAs stand for. I'm not sure we're a profession. And I know this is a philosophical and a sociological and anthropological point, but bottom line is professions have to stand for something. And I don't think we do. And therefore, we might not be a profession anymore. And I'm not the only one who believes that. There's accounting professors who have written papers and spoken at conference on that very topic. So I think this is a huge issue, and our profession seems to dance around it.
Well, thanks, Ron, for your insights, and we hope this is valuable for those of you out there listening.
Thanks, Ed.
This has been the VeriSage Podcast. Thanks for joining us. More information about VeriSage can be found at www.verasage.com.